So my name is Maureen O'Hagan. We were hired by Winslow Point to handle the distribution of the affordable units only. So I don't have any answers regarding the market units, but for the affordables, hopefully I can answer all your questions. So anyways, Winslow Point is a new development. It's located at 100 Westboro Road in Grafton. It's a total of 105 units, with a mix of condominiums and townhomes. 21 units will be affordable through multiple lotteries. Okay, so this lottery, we are looking at how many units? I forget. About 10 units. One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, so this is the first lottery for 10 units. Each lottery, the prices will be adjusted. The next lottery, the income limits will be adjusted because the new income limits are released by HUD on an annual basis anytime between March and May. If by chance they come out before the application deadline of March 11th, we will certainly use the new income limits, which more than likely will go up. But the pricing will stay the same. But the pricing will adjust for each individual lottery. Okay, so the prices I give you today are for this first lottery only. They do not apply beyond this. So, in total, there'll be 11 one-bedroom and 10 two-bedroom units. Each building is four stories. Each building has an elevator. They include one or two bedrooms and one or two bathrooms, depending on your bedroom size. You'll receive a refrigerator, stove, oven, dishwasher, and microwave, is included in the sale. And laundry hookups are available, are not available, will be included, but you would need to purchase your own washer and dryer. Surface parking is available at no charge. Pets are allowed per the pet policy. It's electric heat supplied through an air-cooled heat pump and town water and town sewer. So those are the highlights of the project. The sale price for the one-bedroom units is $175,600. The monthly condo fee is $166. Now, the condo fee is not fixed either. That will be adjusted on an annual basis when the new budgets are put together. So typically, the rates will increase around January 1st. And the two-bedroom price is $198 even, with a monthly condo fee of $184. The 2024 real estate tax rate is $14.31 per thousand. The units will be sold by lottery, which I'm going to review throughout this. I'm going to go through the eligibility criteria. We'll quickly review the application. I'm going to spend the bulk of the last portion of this explaining the documents you need to provide with your application, why you need to provide them, and how we use them in determining your eligibility. And I will tell you right up front, if you submit an incomplete application, your application will not be included in the lottery. You will be notified of the documents that are missing after the application deadline. You certainly can provide the missing documentation. However, you will be added to the waiting list. You will not be included in the lottery. Now, a lot of times, depending on the number of applications we have, we do or we may go and fill the units from the waiting list. But to have the best opportunity for a unit for this go around, you want to make sure that all the required financial documentation is provided, which is why I spend so much time on it at the end of this meeting, just so that no one can see me, so that everybody is on the same page as far as what needs to be provided. FHA, VA, Rocket Mortgage loans, which are pretty much Quicken loans these days, they are not accepted as a mortgage pre-approval because neither one of those programs will close on deed restricted properties. If they did, we'd accept them, but they do not. So we want to make sure the buyer is ready to go when it comes time to close. And with those loans, you would need to go and have them redone. So we do not accept them upfront. Tonight is the public information meeting. I'm here to answer all your questions. We are here throughout the whole application process. So if you forget a question tonight, feel free to call or email me, and we will get back to you. The application deadline is March 11th, so everything needs to be in our office by 11:59 p.m. on March 11th. You can certainly mail your documentation in on the 11th. As long as the information is postmarked with the March 11th date, we will accept it even if we receive it after the deadline. So we will accept that as long as it's postmarked by that date. And then the lottery right now is scheduled for Friday, April 26th. If we can have the lottery sooner, we will. I give myself plenty of time because if we get inundated with applications, it just takes time to review them all. So if I can tighten it up the availability, I will. All right. So eligibility. There's four eligibility criteria. One is based on income, and the maximum allowable income limit is based on the number of people who will be living in the unit. So if you are a single person, the maximum you can earn is $65,550. If you are a two-person household, the maximum you can earn is $74,900. Three-person, $84,250. And a four-person household, $93,600. Now, that is gross income from every household member 18 years of age or older. It's before any deductions, okay? Your income, what counts as income would be your job, your salary or hourly wage, self-employment. If you receive child support, alimony, social security, disability, unemployment, any source of income that you earn will go towards that maximum allowable income limit. There is not a minimum income limit. The minimum income is between you and your lender. Okay, if you were looking to rent an affordable apartment, there is always a minimum income limit. That does not apply for home ownership. Now, you must be a first-time home buyer. A first-time home buyer is defined as someone who has not owned a home, including homes in a trust, for the last 3 years. So if you owned a home 2 years ago and sold it, you need to wait one more year before you can apply for an affordable unit. There are exceptions to that. One, if you're a displaced homemaker, basically an adult who has not worked full-time, full year in the labor force, but during such years worked primarily without pay to care for the home and family. And while a homemaker, you owned a home with your partner or resided in the home owned by your partner. So that's one exception. The second exception, same thing, not same thing, but if you're a single parent where you owned property with your ex and you have children, you would be considered a first-time home buyer if you are divorced. And if the partner owned the home or you owned a home as a couple, your name has to be off the mortgage and the deed in order to qualify. Okay. Third is if one household member is 55 years of age or older, you do not need to be a first-time home buyer. Those are the main three that we work with, but there are two others. One, if your home is not permanently affixed, more like a mobile home, you would be considered permanently affixed to a foundation, you would be considered a first-time home buyer. And the other is if your home is in need of repairs, and in order to come into compliance for the state building codes, it would cost more than the price of a new home. So those are the five exceptions to the first-time home buyer rule. All right, if any one of those, you own a home, you have to have sold it before you can close on an affordable unit, okay? So just keep that in mind because the builder, they may hold the unit for you or may give you a defined time frame to sell that home, meaning it's under a purchase and sale agreement. If it is not, then we will move to the next person on the list, okay? The asset limit is $75,000. The asset limit is your checking, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CDs. We do look at your retirement account. We may or may not count the full value or a portion of that account. And the way we look at 401ks, 403bs, whatever, we look at the full value. And I will say, if you add up all your assets, all your financial assets, and they do not exceed $75,000, don't worry about it. But if your 401k or retirement accounts will put you over the $75,000 limit, And this is where, the exceptions to that I will review. I'm reviewing. So one, if you currently work for an employer and have a 401k, you may or may not be able to withdraw any funds. If you can take an in-service withdrawal from that account, and what that is you're able to withdraw money and not have to pay it back. So it's not a loan. If you're able to do that, then we are going to count that dollar amount you can withdraw. And then from that, we would deduct the taxes you have to pay and any early penalties. And the balance that's remaining is what will count towards your asset limit. If you can only take a loan out on your 401k, we're not going to count that account at all. If you're not able to withdraw money ever while you're working, for example, teachers, people who work for the state, people who work for a city or town, they tend not to be able to withdraw funds while they were st while they are still employed by that organization. In that case, we do not count any aspect of your 401k, 403b, whatever it's called, towards the asset limit. If you're able to take a hardship withdrawal, we will count that, again, less taxes, both state and federal, and if you're underage, penalty, 10% penalty will be deducted. So if you are over the $75,000 asset limit with your current 401k or any 401ks, then you need to provide documentation with your application on the circumstances you can withdraw funds from that current account. Now, if you have past accounts, for a job you are no longer working at, and you've not rolled over that money into any account, it will definitely count towards the asset limit. And again, from that total amount, we will deduct any taxes, and penalties you would need to pay if you were to cash out the account. All right. And that amount will definitely count towards your $75,000 asset limit. IRAs, again, if you have a traditional IRA, you certainly can withdraw funds underage, under 59 and a half. If you were to do that, we would, if you have an IRA, and you're under 59 and a half, we will deduct taxes and early penalty fees, and the balance would count towards the $75,000 asset limit. If you have a Roth IRA, we will tend to count that towards the asset limit as well. Okay. So any questions on assets? Nope. Okay. So the unit must be your principal residence. It cannot be rented or leased without monitoring agent permission. The monitoring agent for this project is the Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities. They used to be called DHCD. If you wanted to rent or lease your unit, you would need to get permission from them. Highly unlikely you'll get it, but you would need to ask. Non-household members are not permitted to be a co-signer on the mortgage, so you need to be able to obtain a mortgage on your own. If you get a gift to assist with down payment and closing costs, that gift, and that this is from family members, friends, whatever, that counts towards the $75,000 asset limit. A mortgage pre-approval letter is required in order to participate in the lottery. There are mortgage guidelines, which I will go over in great detail. So your mortgage must be a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. The loan must have a current fair market interest rate. And if you're going to pay points, no more than 2% above the current interest rate. Okay. You must provide a down payment of a minimum of 3% if you are getting a gift from a family member or you're using a down payment assistance program that's out there, then you need to have 1.5% of your own funds. Because you can get the balance as a gift or a down payment program. But if you're not using a gift and you're not using a down payment assistance program, then you must provide 3% down payment. The loan can have no more than 2 points. I already said that. And the buyer may not pay 38% of their monthly income for housing costs, no more than 38% of their monthly income from housing costs. I've already mentioned non-household members cannot be co-signers and the loans that we will not accept. Now, there are programs out there geared specifically for first-time home buyers. One is called the One Mortgage Program. That program is available through MHP, which is the Massachusetts Housing Partnership. It's their program, but I'm sorry, it's available only through approved lenders. Typically, the highlight of that program is the minimum 3% down payment. You do not pay private mortgage insurance, and in any conventional mortgage, if you're putting less than 20% down, you are paying PMI, private mortgage insurance, so you're not paying that. You pay below market interest rate, and you need a minimum credit score of 660. All right, that program is available only through approved lenders. You can find any lender on our website, mcohousingservices.com, under the finance tab, is an approved lender under the One Mortgage Program. So their contact information is there. If you want to find the full list of approved lenders, you can go under mhp.net. You need to do a little navigating, but you'll be able to find the full list of approved lenders for the One Mortgage Program. The other program we suggest you look at is through Mass Housing. They have a new program. I think it's called Workplace something. And that they have down payment assistance through that program. I believe the eligibility criteria is very similar to what I told you about the One Mortgage Program. Mass Housing is pretty much available through any lender out there. So I would recommend you look at that program as well. We will accept, if you choose not to go that route, we'll certainly accept a pre-approval for any program as long as it meets the criteria of the Affordable Housing Program. So you don't have to use any one of those. I recommend it, but you don't have to. Now, I've added additional mortgage specifics because some people don't provide the appropriate information and get angry. So I'm going to go over each point. Your mortgage must cover the purchase price of the home. Okay. Your mortgage pre-approval is going to say they'll finance you for, I'm just throwing numbers out here, nothing to do with the pricing, $200,000, and the cost of the home is $225,000. So I know in this instance, you're going to have a $25,000 down payment, whether it's through your own funds, through a down payment program, or through a gift program. So, if you're applying for the one or and you're a single person and may and hope to get a two-bedroom unit, you the pre-approval must be priced to cover the higher price of the unit. So, if you're a single person and you provide a perfect pre-approval, that's fine at $175,600. But you want a two-bedroom unit, you're not going to get it because then your pre-approval should have been submitted at the $198,000 price. Okay, so you're only going to, and we look at that when we review your eligibility. We look at the down payment based on what the financing amount is on the pre-approval, and we look at the purchase price. And if the purchase price is less than the price of the home, you're not going to be included in the lottery. So it's got to cover the price of the home. Must be a fixed rate mortgage. Any pre-approvals that come through with an adjustable rate mortgage, it will not be accepted and you automatically will not be included in the lottery. And we're not going to look at any of your other documentation. Again, your pre-approval must show the purchase price and the financing amount. If it does not, you will not be included in the lottery. Telling me you can finance $150,000, that may be on a $160,000 price unit, not the $175,000. So we need document. That's why it must show the purchase price on the mortgage pre-approval. If your mortgage pre-approval does not have an expiration date on it, then after 60 days from the date of issue, it will be considered expired. If your pre-approval expires after your application submission, we will accept it. Understanding if you have the opportunity to purchase, you will need to provide an updated pre-approval. If it expires prior to your application submission, you won't be included in the lottery. So pay attention to those dates. People get a pre-approval in June and think it's still June of 2023 and submit it and think it still works for March 2024. It does not. So if it's not within that 60 days, we won't accept it. And a most, not all, but most pre-approvals will have an expiration date on it, and we will accept it. But if it does not, it's good for 60 days. If you plan on using a down payment assistance program, maybe through the workplace program or the Federal Home Loan Bank is, will be releasing funds soon. The program must be stated on the pre-approval. All right. If it's not listed on the pre-approval and I see your need to finance $30,000, then I'm going to expect to see that $30,000 in your bank account. And if I don't see it, you are not going to be included in the lottery, which is why if you're using any one of the down payment assistance programs out there, that program must be listed on the pre-approval. It may not have the amount you're going to get. I understand that it may not have that, but at least we know you're using the workforce program and you're using the down payment assistance program or, you know, any one of the others that are out there. So we need to see that program listed on your mortgage pre-approval. If it is not, and you haven't notified us in any way, shape, or form of that program, then we expect to see the financing amount that's listed on the on your pre-approval in your bank account at the time we review your application. All right. So we do, when we review your application, again, we review your mortgage pre-approval. And we ex if you're not using a down payment assistance, we do expect to see those funds in your account. I know I'm repeating myself, but I can't stress it enough. We need to see that money, it, liquid money in that account when we review your application. If you are getting gift amount from a family member or a friend, we don't expect to see that because usually they give that money if you have the opportunity to purchase. But they will be providing a letter as part of your application stating, "Hi, I'm Maureen O'Hagan, the mother of Sean O'Hagan, and we will be gifting him $15,000 for down payment assistance." I don't expect to see that $15,000 in the account, but I expect to see the balance of the pre-approval. And it may just come down to 1.5%. He may get be getting all of it as a gift, but so it, which at that point he only needs or she only needs to provide a 1.5% down payment. That money I need to see in your account, just the 1.5%. And that's going to be based on the, your current balances of all the liquid accounts you have provided us. And if it doesn't add up to 100 to 1.5%, you're not going to be included in the lottery because the builder's going to be ready to close. He's going to be ready to go to PNS. And, you know, they don't want to do that unless they're assured by me that you have the funds to close. Okay. Don't anyone tell me you're going to use your tax refund, which is great. But I can't look at it and guarantee you're going to have that refund. I don't know when you've submitted your taxes, if that refund is going to be in your account at the time you close. So we only look at the money that is in your account at the time of application. Okay. You know, if hoping to get your tax refund is great, and a lot of people will use it for a down payment, but we have no guarantee it's going to be received by the time you close. And for that reason, we won't count it or we won't accept it as part of your down payment funds. Let's see. Okay, I think I've done everything. Oh, biggest thing, online mortgage pre-approvals. You can go to on any bank and you can plug in your income, you can plug in a down payment, and you can print out a letter. It's a worthless piece of paper for us because you can put in any income amount you want, you can put in any asset amount you want. No one's checked your credit. No one's verified that's actually your income and you actually have those funds, which is why we actually need a letter from the mortgage lender you're working with, whether it's a bank or a mortgage company, whatever. We need to see their contact information and signature on that letter. Some people, for example, go to Citizens, and I know it's an online letter, and I don't include them because it's a worthless piece of paper. Without you having sat down with someone, this is my income, this is my assets, they pull your credit. No one can make a solid decision on your pre-approval. So just keep that in mind. And also note any pre-approvals that have crossed out something, white it out, and submitted with the application. We're not going to use that either because clearly they're making a change to make it work for them for this particular project. And we won't accept that either. So there's a lot to be included on the PNS. I'm sorry, on the mortgage pre-approval. Most lenders, it's not an issue. So you just need to review it and make sure it works. It includes everything that I've just discussed, which is under the additional mortgage specifics on page 4 of the application. All right. 7 of the 10 units will be for a household who meets one of the local preference guidelines, which are your current Grafton residence. You work for the town of Grafton or the Grafton School District, Grafton Public Schools. You're working in the town of Grafton, or you have a bona fide offer from an employer located in the town of Grafton, or you have children attending the Grafton school system. Any one of those, and you're considered local preference. All right. The benefit of local preference is you have two opportunities for a unit because in the lottery, there'll be a local pool and an open pool. If you're local, you are automatically included in the open pool as well. So you will have two opportunities for a unit. Those that are not local or who do not meet one of the local preference criteria will be included in the open pool only and will have one opportunity for a unit. The local pool only applies until the application deadline. So if we receive applications after that deadline and we've added you to the waiting list and you're local, it is not going to be taken into consideration if we need to go to the wait list to fill the units. So it only applies during up until March 11th. And so we will review all your applications prior to the lottery. And obviously, we will take local preference under consideration. But any application that comes in after the 11th, it is automatic open pool if you have the opportunity to purchase. Now, there are, if you want a two bedroom household, the guidelines are husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a room and that there's at least one person per bedroom thereafter. So if you're eligible for a two bedroom unit, it's going to be husband and wife or single person, single parent, plus at least one child. And it may not be a child, but whatever. It will be eligible for a two bedroom unit. You will have first priority for the two bedroom units. If you are single or a couple with no children and not pregnant, you are eligible for a one bedroom unit only. Now, if we exhaust the two bedroom lottery list, both in the local pool and open pool, and we still have two bedroom units available, we absolutely will offer them to one person households. Absolutely until the units are filled. But for the initial distribution of the units, those who require two bedrooms will have priority for those two bedroom units. If you are pregnant, the unborn child does count as a household member. You need to provide proof that you are in fact pregnant with a letter from your doctor. If you are going through or are in the process of a separation of or divorce, in order to determine your eligibility, we need to know what the distribution of family assets are, if you have children, what the child support is, if you'll be getting alimony. So if you're not that far along in your divorce or process, then it's too early for you to apply for a unit. The next lottery may be better for you. Or at minimum, we're going to count your ex's income and assets and home buyer status in determining your eligibility, even if they won't be living in the unit. Okay. So if you're not far enough along in that process where we know the distribution of the family assets, then it's too early for you to apply for a lottery. Not to say you won't work for the next one, but for this one, you're just too early. If you require a reasonable accommodation, you need to provide documentation with your application, usually a letter from a doctor stating that you do need a special accommodation or modification. Okay, so there's two pools in this lottery. There's the local pool and the open pool. 28.2% of the applicants in the local pool need to be minority. If we haven't met that 28.2%, which I won't know that till I start reviewing the applications. Then we will do a mini lottery or a lottery first before we actually draw for the units to move the number of non-local minority applicants from the open pool into the local pool. That will be the first lottery we do if we don't meet the 28.2%. So in that case, the non-local minority applicants from the open pool that are moved into the local pool by lottery will then be treated as if they were a local applicant, and they will have two opportunities for the unit because they're now going to be included in both the local pool and the open pool. Those that are not drawn over into the local pool will just have the one opportunity for a unit. Sometimes we have to do that, and sometimes we don't. Every lottery is different. Okay, so what makes the units affordable is the deed rider. You will sign a deed rider at closing, and you will receive a copy of that deed rider with your purchase and sale agreement. And that deed rider will provide the guidelines on if you go into foreclosure, if you want to sell the home, if you want to make improvements of the home. It covers all that information. But the bulk of it, the couple things I'm going to highlight today is one, the resale price. So you are buying a unit at below market value based on the eligibility criteria I reviewed. You will sell the unit to an eligible, affordable buyer as well, meeting the same eligibility criteria you did at the time you sell the unit. So when you purchase a unit, a resale price multiplier is determined at the time you purchase. And that's determined by taking the purchase price and dividing it by the current median income. And the example I gave in here for the two bedroom price is $198,000. It's divided by the median income, which is $122,000, and that equals 1.6. So when you go to sell the unit, that 1.6 is multiplied by the median income at the time you sell. All right. The median income tend or lately has been going up on an annual basis. So if it goes up, you'll make money. If it stays the same or goes down, the home will be sold for what you paid for it. So it's pretty much guaranteed you're not going to lose any money when you sell your property. Okay. Now, the home again, DHCD here is the monitoring agent. So when you are ready to sell your home, you need to DHCD. I'm sorry. They changed their name and I can never remember to say it. It's now called the Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities, EOHLC. So when you're ready to sell the unit, you would notify the EOHLC that you want to sell. And then they will price your unit. And then added to that price is a 2% resale fee. So your price is one, and then what the home will be sold for is a different price. And that 2% is what is paid to the person who sells the unit. EOHLC will assign your unit to be sold to us or to another company that does affordable housing. They will sell the unit for you. So you're not paying any broker fees to sell the unit. So you're saving 5% right off the top. You still will need to pay for an attorney to prepare the legal documents that need to be prepared to close. But you're not paying that usual, typically a 5% resale fee, a 5% broker fee. So it will save you on that. Now, capital improvements may be taken under consideration when you sell. Capital improvement is essentially your home has minimum and working order in order to sell. So if you need to replace your heating system, this is not just repairs or annual cleaning or whatever. You have a lot of work done on it, or replace the water heater, or replace, say there's, you're living in a condo. So say there's an assessment in the building for multiple repairs. Those can be considered capital improvements. What you need to remember is, and I'm just giving you the highlights here, EOHLC is who you need to contact. But what you need to keep in mind, if you have work, what's considered capital improvements, you need to replace your refrigerator because you're getting one in the sale. When you sell the home, the refrigerator needs to be included in the sale and it broke down. That's a capital improvement. So what you need to remember, if any of that happens to you, or you need to make those major repairs, you need to pass them by EOHLC before the work is done. They're not going to say no, but they may have a policy or steps you need to do before they approve it. And then once the work is done, you need to provide the EOHLC a copy of the paid invoice at the time the work was finished. All right. Do not keep a folder of all the improvements you did in the home. You lived there 5 years and then send all the invoices to, or the paid invoices to EOHLC. That's too late. You need to provide that information at the time the work is done. All right. Now, I get this is a condo, but say you wanted to put in hardwood floors throughout, or you wanted to change countertops to granite. That's great. It's your home. You can do whatever you want, but things like that is for your enjoyment only. You will not see any return on that investment when you sell your property. All right. So there are capital improvements and what I call things for your enjoyment. Things for your enjoyment, no money back when you sell. Capital improvements, they may add money to the sale price as long as the price is still affordable to the next buyer. So it's going to be prorated. You're never going to get dollar for dollar back, but it will be prorated. And I don't know how they do it, to see if it can be added to the sale price of the home. All right. Any question on the deed writer? Any questions so far? Well, you guys are really easy. The chat's open if you want to put through something. All right. So the lottery. We have to review every applicant prior to the lottery. We don't review any applications until after the application deadline, which is why if you submit an incomplete application, you're notified after the deadline. All we do is log the applications in at the time of receipt. So after the application deadline, we will review your application for eligibility. Again, incompletes, I've already talked about it. I'm not going to go in it again. Incomplete, you won't be included. If you are determined eligible, then you will receive a lottery code, which is going to be three letters, usually a combination of letters in your name. The lottery code is what will be announced during the lottery. We do not announce your name. We announce your lottery code only. There will be two pools we'll pull. We'll pull the local pool and we'll pull the open pool. And we'll create a ranking. All the local applicants, if there's 10 or 20, they're all going to be ranked 1 through 20, let's say. And if we have 40 in the open pool, they're going to be ranked 1 through 40. Post-lottery, we will break that list by household size. So if you're a one bedroom, I'll create a one bedroom local pool list, a two bedroom local pool list, and a one and two bedroom list for the open pool. Post-lottery, I will email you. The list is drawn, and I will also include in that list the order for people to purchase. Okay? So you will know the day of the lottery what your position is in to purchase. Keeping in mind, if you're drawn first, and you're a single person and want a two bedroom, we're going to move to the first true two bedroom household on the list. All right. You stay in first position, but we will only contact you for that two bedroom unit if we have exhausted everybody in the local and everybody in the open pool who requires two bedrooms. If units remain, we will give you a call after that. So if you want a two bedroom unit, that's fine. If you only put a two bedroom unit on, when I get to the application, that's all we're going to put you in for. All right. So if you want a one or a two bedroom unit, then I would suggest you check off both one and two bedroom because we only will put you in the lottery for what you requested. So if you're a single person and requested two bedroom only, that's the only list you're going to be on. You're not going to have any opportunity for a one bedroom unit. Okay. So everyone who required or requested a one bedroom will have that opportunity before you. So keep that in mind when you fill out the application. Now there are five one bedroom units and five two bedroom units. Three of the one bedroom units and four of the two bedroom units are local. Okay. Which leaves two one bedrooms and one two bedroom, which is in the open pool. Now, based on my experience, and I've been doing this a very long time, local pool applicants will have opportunity for more units than three. Okay. I will, you'll hear me say it several times. I am absolutely brutal, not me, but our office is brutal when we're reviewing applications. So usually more than 50% of the applications we receive for any one lottery is incomplete and they are not included in the lottery. And that will be local and open people. So usually the list, based on the number of applications we get, is going to be far less included in the lottery than it should be, quite frankly. But that's because people do not read the application. And unfortunately, if you don't do that, there are consequences. So, all right. So I'll see. Prior to the lottery, those that are included, you'll receive an email from me, which will include your lottery code. It will include your household size and your bedroom size. So you really need to check it, and get back to me if there's any mistakes. There will be no changes to your application after you submit it. So, for example, if you only you're a single person or a one bedroom household and you only put a two bedroom preference down, we're not going to change you right now to a one or two bedroom. Nope. No. If you want that, we'll add you to the waiting list for a one bedroom unit if units remain, but we will not make a change to your application. All right, the units, hang on. Okay, the units are slated to be available from March through May. And that I will verify the time frame with the builder prior to the lottery. Things always seem to be closing late these days. Every one of my builders that I work with, for whatever reason, things get delayed. And it's delivery of, usually it's delivery of materials, something, you know, gas or whatever is electric isn't hooked up. There always seems to be delays. Pulte, who is building this development, they seem to be more on time than other people. But there can be changes. So these dates on the unit availability are estimated dates only. And I will verify them with the builder prior to the lottery if these dates have changed. They'll know closer to, you know, in April, they'll know more than they do in February. And we put this together in January. So they'll know where they are in their construction schedule. The way Pulte closes, they will close the fourth floor units first, then the third, then the second, then the first floor. Okay. Which is why there are a range of dates in a condominium building. They're not all going to be available at the same time, but they will, I will get those dates prior to the lottery. It's too early to do it now. So right now the estimated pricing, and when we price the units, we have to price it at the current interest rate plus a quarter percent. So the interest rate right now is lower than what we had to use to price these units. But right now the estimated pricing for a one bedroom unit is $1,638 a month. Keeping in mind, that includes $108 of private mortgage insurance. So if you use these programs for first-time home buyers, excuse me, $108 is immediately going to come off the top of that $1,638 price for a one-bedroom unit and $122 for the two-bedroom unit. Okay, so that's why those programs can save you money. You're saving money on the interest rate and you're saving money on PMI. So it really works well, I think, for first-time home buyers. And then the maximum price, when we price the unit, and this is just estimates. Don't go in and say, well, MCO said this is the pricing. This is just an estimate. It could be less, it could be the same, it could be more. And understanding this is based on a 5% down payment, you may be putting more down, which is going to bring your total monthly expenses down as well. But for a two-bedroom unit, it was priced affordable at $1,843 a month for a three-person household. But again, this is all samples here. It depends how much you put down. So there is a list of the units that are affordable in the application. So you can take a look at them. The unit styles, you can go, oh shoot, I never got them. I need to follow up with them. I have here the floor plans will be posted on our website. They're not there yet. I need to follow up with Pulte again and get the floor plans. They have not sent them to me. We were working on it and then we all got busy and I never got them. So your monthly condo fee includes insurance studs out. You will need to get your own homeowner's insurance for liability and for your personal property. You will need to get your own insurance. Obviously, landscaping, snow removal, street maintenance, trash, maintenance of the common areas, cleaning of the common areas, maintenance of the property, a reserve fund and administrative fees are taken out of. That's what your condo fee is covering. Your condo fee for the affordable unit is less than the monthly fee that the market homeowners are paying. So keep in mind, these fees are not fixed. They will increase on an annual basis. If it's a 5% increase, it's going to be 5% on the affordable rate you're paying, not 5% on what the market rate is paying. So you're always going to pay less than the market rate units for condo fees. I do have really small floor plans here, so you can see where the buildings, where the units are in the building. But I will talk to Pulte tomorrow to get an updated floor plans for the affordable units. All right, so the application. I'm going to go over, I mean, the application, page 14, if you're following along with the application. You're looking at personal information, your household size, your bedroom size, your employment. The next page is your what your monthly income is. You want to give us that as close a guesstimate as you can. We ask for a listing of your household assets and the current amounts. Now we talked about there's a local pool and an open pool. I'm sorry, not that. The minority status, the section on the application that states about your family, that's where you would fill in your minority status. It's purely optional, but if you are a minority, then it can work, it may work to your advantage to fill it out, but it's up to you. And then on page 16, you need to sign dated. There is an affidavit and disclosure form on pages 17 and 18. You need to read, sign, and date that. All right. So now I'm going to go over page 19, which are the application tips. And I update this as needed. I try to let you all know where people make their mistakes in missing documentation to submit with the application. So I've kind of put a list together. And like I said, I update it as I see problems occurring. So I'm going to go over in detail, starting with the next page, all the documentation you need to provide with your application. I'm going to go in detail of what it is, why you need to provide it, and how we use it so you understand. But I'm going to go over the tips first. I've already said more than 50% of the applications we receive for this lottery will not be included in the lottery. It's just how it is. People are not reading the application. We do not review applicants until after the application deadline. It doesn't matter if you were the first person in or the last person in, as long as it's in by the deadline, you're all treated equally. So you will find throughout the next section, there's a lot of, I put notes just, and the notes are just tips for you to get things done correctly. So not reading those notes or not paying attention to those notes can be the difference between an eligible and ineligible applicant or an incomplete application. Okay. So please pay attention to them, and I will go through them when we get to that section. All financial documentation, income, and assets are required for every household member 18 or older. If we need the information, period. If you have a student, and I'll get to that later, never mind. All asset statements must include your name, account number, and institution name. People are sending us the photos from their cell phone when you bring up your account. It doesn't have your name on it. It may not have your account number on it, and we'll be lucky if it has the institution name on it. That is not acceptable. You need to go in and print out a statement on the website because you can send us that and we have no idea if that's your account or not. So we can't really count it for you because we don't know it's actually yours, which is why you need to provide the full statement. All right. If you have any questions whether you should provide a document or not, don't assume you don't have to. Submit it anyways. I'd rather receive too much information than not enough. All right. If you're not sure if you should submit it, call me. before you submit your application, and I'll let you know if you need to submit it or not. But if you don't want to call me, don't assume it's not included. Better safe than sorry. People, we again, you have to provide your retirement accounts. I've talked about that a little bit. I'll go into a little more detail in a bit. But some people will say to me, have said to me, which makes me shake my head, I can see the amount listed on your pay stub, or I can see that you have an account on your W-2, and that is correct. I do not know the value of the account, which is why we need the actual statement, the last, just one of your retirement accounts. We just need the last statement, and it may be quarterly, and that's okay, but we need the last statement to see what the amount is. So don't ever say to me, check my pay stub or check my W-2, because it's not going to work. We need the actual statement. If you have a Robinhood, Acorn, crypto accounts, you need to provide the last statement of those accounts. Whether you have it, if it's an open account, you need to provide it to us. Maybe it has a zero balance, and you may look at it and say, well, this has no money in it. I don't need to provide it. Well, you do, because I don't know what has zero balance. It, for all I know, it has $100,000 in the account. That's why you must provide the statement for any one of those accounts. If you have an open account, provide it, whether there's any funds in there or not. If you're unable to provide some specific information, then submit a note with your application explaining why it's not there. I can't guarantee it, but you know, if we're able to work with you, we will. I can't guarantee we can. But if the document's not provided and you've had some difficulty and you don't let us know, because I'm not going to call you and check, if you don't let us know the problems you've had, we can't work with you. So if you can't provide something, and an example is I worked with a woman who had started a new job and she hadn't been there long enough to get copies of her 401k statement because it was quarterly and the quarter wasn't up. I don't know that, but for her, she did not provide the statement. It's an incomplete application. Had she told me, under that circumstance, I absolutely would have worked with her, but she didn't tell me. So I can't help you if I don't know what the problem is. All right. Do not take photos with your cell phone of any documentation and submit it to us. 9 times out of 10, the photos are completely illegible. They're blurry, they're crooked. They're wavy baked because the paper's not flat on the table. We won't accept it. So just take a, you know, get to a printer, print a copy. You can scan and email it to us, but do not take a photo and send it to us. People will take photo, you know, the application, 7 or 8 pages of the application, and then send it to us. No, you need to scan the application in its entirety and return it to us. I'm not going to sit here and print out 10 individual pages. I have better ways to spend my time. You can certainly fax your application. We absolutely will accept it, but keep in mind if for whatever reason all pages are not received, your application will be considered incomplete. You're much better off, I think, and we have a great printer, but it depends where the fax is coming from if we get it all. You know, you can mail it is our preferred way to receive it, and you can certainly email it. But either way, however you choose to get it, we need to get all the pages. All right. So now I'm going to spend the rest of the time going over the documents you need to provide. One, I've talked about it ad nauseum, a mortgage pre-approval. FHA, VA, Quicken, and Rocket loans are not accepted. I've gone over what needs to be included in the pre-approval, so I'm not going to repeat myself. If you require a reasonable accommodation, you must request that at the time of application and provide any supporting documentation. If your local preference, you need to check the which one meets your guidelines. If you're, and then you need to provide proof. So if you're working for the town, we're going to know that, or the school system based on your pay stubs. But if you live in Grafton, you work someplace in Worcester, you need to provide a copy of your lease, a copy of a current utility bill. Something that shows that you actually live, currently live in Grafton. And if you live outside, if you have a child that goes to Grafton School District, then we need a letter from the school that states they go there. And that is obviously only if you live in a different town and your child goes to Grafton Schools. All right, so to the nitty-gritty. We need your last five consecutive pay stubs. We look at your pay stubs very carefully. We obviously use your pay stubs to determine your income. And we determine your income two ways. One, we will look at your gross pay per paycheck. We will average it over the five pay stubs, paychecks, pay periods. And then we will multiply by the number of pay periods in the year. So whether it's 12, 24, 26, or 52, that's one way we determine your income. The second way we look at your year to date. We will divide the year to date by the number of weeks in the year so far, and we get that from a website, and then we multiply that by 52. Whichever is higher is going to be counted as your income. We also will look at your previous year's income in 2023. If there's a significant difference, meaning you made a boatload of money in 2023 and you're projected far less in 2024, then we're going to ask you why. But for the most part, we look at the two things I said. If any one of those puts you over income, then we'll look more carefully at the sources of your income, if it's regular pay, bonus, commission, whatever. And if we can pull your bonuses out, you don't get a bonus that you don't work on commission, so you're not getting it every month. Your bonus out, we'll pull that out and add it in separately. And a lot of times that can make the difference being eligible and not eligible. So we don't like disqualifying people, but so we will do our best to see if we can make it work. No, it doesn't work all the time, but we certainly try. So you do need to provide the last five statements. Now, what else we get from your pay stubs? We determine your income. We'll know from your pay stub if you have a retirement account, be it a 403B, Roth IRA, 401K. It will tell us that on your pay stub. So that's how we know you have a retirement account. That's how we know we need to, we will expect to see a copy of it, this last statement with your application. And then the last thing we look at for your pay stub, we look at most people have direct deposit, not all, but the majority have direct deposit, and your bank statement, your pay stub statement will say checking and usually will list the last four digits of your account. So when we're reviewing your asset statements, we go back to your bank statements and we expect to see if you have one checking account, we expect it to that checking account to be included with your documentation. Some people have five accounts. They split their money through multiple accounts between checking and savings, which is fine. But we do expect to see all five of those accounts when we're reviewing your application. I mention that because some people have a lot of accounts, and some accounts, the money just, it's emergency day fund, rainy day fund, the money goes in and they forget about the account. We won't miss it. So that's why I ask you to review your pay stubs to make sure you've included all your accounts. All right. Now you need to provide five pay stubs, whether you're paid weekly, biweekly, monthly, or semi. People will send us three pay stubs and state it covers 6 weeks, which it does, but that is not what we've asked for. We need five. Okay. No exceptions unless you have a new job. If you have gotten a new job in the past 12 months, you need to provide a copy of the offer letter from your new employer, and you need to provide a letter from your old employer that you are no longer working there and what your separation date was. Okay. We will look at your offer letter because it'll give your salary. If you're hourly, it'll give that. It should give the number of hours a week you work. It should, a lot of the letters will state whether you get a bonus and when you're eligible for a bonus or your commission and that kind of stuff. So we do read those letters, so you do need to provide them with your application. And in that case, it may be a new job and you only have worked there 3 weeks. So you may only have one paycheck. And that's okay because we have the offer letter that states your start date. So we're not going to penalize you if you can't provide five pay stubs because you started a new job. If your pay stubs are direct deposits, 9 times out of 10, you do not get your statement, that shows all the deductions and stuff. So you need to go, and I don't know where, so you need to talk to HR. You can go online and print out those pay stubs. All right. So not being able to provide a pay stub from direct deposit is not an excuse to only send me less than the 5, because you can somewhere online, and you need to get it from HR, you can print out those pay stubs. All right. So if you are receiving unemployment, you can provide a copy of the DOR statement that tells us what the amount you are receiving. And then you need to provide the history of your pay history of how long you've been getting those checks. And usually in one of the letters, it'll state when you stop receiving those checks. So we need that information to determine your eligibility. And the same if you're getting disability, workers' comp, or severance pay. You don't have pay stubs for that. I know that. But you do have a letter that will state how much you're getting during just dis for disability, workers' comp, severance pay, and when that money ends. All right. So we need to know that so we're not attributing more money than we should, which could actually put you over income. We don't want to do that. So we only want to use the amount that you're actually going to receive, which is why we need those begin dates and end dates. Same with unemployment. All right. Any questions on pay stubs? Nope. Okay. If you are receiving Social Security, we need a copy of the Social Security benefit letter, and that's whether it's straight Social Security, SSDI, or supplemental. We need just that current letter for 2024 of what you're receiving. And that would apply if you're receiving annuities, insurance, retirement, pensions, disability, death benefits, or any other type of regular monthly deposit that is not a pay stub. You would have received correspondence to tell you how much you're getting a month. You need to provide that letter. And if you got the letter 5 years ago and the dollar amount hasn't changed, then hopefully you still have that letter. We want the most recent one, hopefully from 2024, but we need that letter or something that tells us how much you're getting a month. And the reason for that is your eligibility is based on gross income. Yes, I may be able to go into your bank statement and see you've had a deposit from Fidelity for, $400, but I don't know if that's gross or net. Okay. That's why you need to provide the statements. We need to know if it's gross or net because your eligibility is based on gross. So that's why we need that documentation. If you are receiving child support or alimony, if you're getting it through the DOR, then we need a copy of the DOR statement that provides the amount that is due you one however often, weekly, biweekly, or monthly. And then we also need the pay history to see, the past 12 months, how much you've been getting. Now, if you, excuse me, if you've been awarded child support through the DOR and are not receiving it, we're not going to count it as part of your income. And we're going to know you haven't received it, or perhaps you've received it at a regularly, but as a lesser amount because we're seeing the pay history. Okay. That's why you need to provide that documentation. If you are receiving child support, not through the DOR, but you have a divorce agreement with your ex or whatever their relationship was with them, then we need a copy of that documentation. Okay. Which would typically be your divorce papers. And in there, it'll be child support, it will be alimony, so we know how much you're getting and when it's ending. Sorry. Okay. If you are self-employed, you do not have a paycheck with direct deposit. You're working for yourself. So what you need to do for the tax season is you need to put for example, your income and expenses on a monthly basis. So when you're applying for the lottery, you need to create a spreadsheet for the last 12 months that breaks out your income and expenses on a monthly basis. That provides us with your net income. And we use your net in when you're self-employed only, not when you're working for a company. We look at your net income in determining your income. So you have to provide a 12-month spreadsheet. Now that includes Uber, that includes Lyft, that includes if you're a consultant, or you have your own little bookkeeping business or your handyman business, We need the last 12 months of income and expenses. That's how we determine your eligibility. Now, if you have already done your taxes for 2023 and you're self-employed, we're going to know that, and we're going to have the 12 months for January through December 2023 from your tax return. In that case, I would accept January and February statements only because we're so close to the last year. So we would only need the 2 months because, and that's only if you have submitted already your 2023 tax return to the IRS. If you haven't, then I need the last 12 months broken out. If you use QuickBooks or some other kind of financial program, you can certainly print out a report. It can be cumulative for the year, January 1st to December 31st, income, expenses, net income for the year. I'm good with that too. So, you know, I try to be acceptable to whatever's easiest for you. But if you don't have a financial software, then you do need to put a spreadsheet together. It doesn't have to be fancy, but we do need to know that information. All right. You need to provide your business and checking accounts as well if you have separate accounts from your personal home accounts. Okay. Now you need to provide your last 3 years of federal income tax returns. So that would be if you have filed your 2023, 21, 22, and 23. We cannot require 2023 because the application deadline is March 11th and the tax deadline is April 15th. So if you have not filed your 2023, then we need your 2020, 2021, and 2022 federal income tax returns. We need every page that is submitted to the IRS. Now we look at your W-2s. We can see obviously your income, not W-2s, taxes. We can see your income, if you get paid interest and dividends, if you get Social Security, you've taken distribution from an IRA or a Roth IRA, if you're self-employed, if you've owned a home or own a home, we get all that from your taxes. So we look at your returns closely. We only want your federal income tax returns. We do not want your state. If you provide your state returns, they will automatically be shredded. We're not going to save them. They're just going in the shredder. So we need just your federal income tax returns. Now, remember, all pages submitted to the IRS. If you have filed taxes in any one of those years and you cannot find a copy of your tax return, we will accept a tax transcript. You can obtain the transcript from the IRS. Two ways. One, you can go on irs.gov. Print out the 4506-T form, fill it out, and mail it to the IRS. They will mail you a tax transcript for the years you have requested. Or, what's easier, is you can create an account on the irs.gov. And then you log in, create a username and password, and they do ask for, I guess, some additional documentation to prove you are who you are. But then you can just go in and print out that form, okay, when you get into your account. The tax transcript for all the years if you want, or just the year you can't find. Okay, and then you can also do the same. Okay, never mind. Getting ahead of myself. If you have not filed tax returns in any one of those years, then you need to provide us with a letter from the IRS that verifies you did not file taxes. You can use that same form, 4506-T, or you can log on to the irs.gov. And you can print out that letter, okay? Either way, you need to provide the tax returns. And if you didn't file that non-filing letter for the last 3 years, okay? And you need to provide the corresponding W-2s or 1099s for those years as well. Now, your W-2s, I mean, obviously we're going to see your gross amount and we use the amount before any adjustments. But we're also going to know if you have a retirement account from your W-2. Any kind of your retirement account. We're going to know that. So that's why I'm getting a little ahead of myself because we're getting to the assets in a moment. That's how we're going to know if you have a retirement account. And we're going to know that from 2020 through 2023. So we need all those accounts. Okay. So we do look at that pretty closely. So you need to provide all your statements. All right. Any questions on taxes? Nope. Okay. All right. So now we're going to move to assets. And I've mentioned it once already. There's a note here, and there were notes under the federal income tax return. So the general note that I have under the assets, all assets, and I'm repeating myself, must include your name, account number, and institution name for all checking, savings, investment, retirement accounts. Any account provided without this information is an automatic incomplete application. All right. So for your checking account, we need the last 3 months' statements, and we need the actual statements. Do not print out a running transaction list for 3 months. No, we won't accept it. We need to see the actual individual bank statements for 3 months. If you don't receive bank statements anymore, you can log into your bank account and you can print out the e-statements for each of the last 3 months. Okay? And we want the complete statements, meaning if you're sending your application in tomorrow, your February statement probably isn't available. I don't want a partial statement. So I want your January, December, and November statements. Okay? So we look at your bank statements with a fine-tooth comb, particularly your deposits. So we're going to look at your deposits. We're going to know if you have direct deposit, we're going to know the payroll. If you get a tax refund, we're going to know that. If you have Social Security, we're going to know that because we can read it. It's identifiable on your deposits. If you have ATM deposits, Venmo, PayPal, Poshmark, Zelle, mobile, any one of those kind of deposits or anything like that, there's no way I can list them all. You need to identify where that money's coming from, okay? Meaning your Venmo, maybe you know, for $50, you went out to dinner with a friend and they transferred the money into your Venmo account. That's okay. You just need to let us know. If you have ATM deposits, you need to tell us where it is from. If you have Zelle deposits, we need to know what it's for. If you don't, and the reason it's so important to do this, if you don't identify those deposits, we are going to count them as income. We're going to average them over the 3 months, and then we're going to multiply that amount by 12, and it's going to be added to your income. And a lot of times that puts people over. And if you're over because of that, you're over. So pay attention. I can't tell you how important this is to the notes under the asset statements. Because if you don't let us know, we're going to assume you have another source of income. Now, people get mad at us because they have a Venmo, you know, three Venmos for $12 each. And I get your frustration. You can write this directly on your bank statements. You do not need to make a nice separate sheet, just hand print it legibly, right on the bank statement where that money came from. It could be you upfronted money for a trip and your friends are paying you back. That's okay. That's what we need to know. But if you don't identify them, we are going to count it as income and it could affect your eligibility. So please take the time and review those over each bank statement that you're reviewing, both checking and savings, because we look at them the same. Now, we don't pay a whole lot of attention to how you are using, how you're spending your money. It's none of my business, quite honestly, but I will do a quick scan through your transactions to see if you're transferring into a bank account you didn't tell us about, or you're transferring into a Fidelity account every month and you didn't provide a statement. So we look for that kind of thing. I don't care how you spend your money. We are literally just looking for transfers, Zelle transfers, any other Robinhood, Acorn, all those are kind of accounts. And we're going through a quick scan. That's what we're looking for. So just look at that yourself because you may have forgotten to provide a statement and we'll figure it out based on your bank statements. All right. If you have a prepaid debit card and this is not your ATM card with your bank, but it's a different card that some people get, their pay through a Visa, prepaid card, different kinds of ways. So we only need the last statement of those accounts. Okay. We don't need the full last 3 months. We need the last statement because we're looking to, verify that that's the only account, only money from X ABC job that's going into the account. And if there's any balance on that statement, that will count towards your asset, $75,000 asset limit. So everything I've just said about your checking account also applies for your savings accounts. So you need to look through those deposits. Transfers from your checking into your savings, we know that because we're going to match the account numbers. But transfers from another account, regular transfers from another account into your account, A, we're going to think, one, you didn't provide a bank statement or a bank account that you should have, so your application's incomplete. Or it may be, your mom's giving you money to help you out, and that's okay. That would be considered the gift money, quite honestly. So you do need to let us know if that's what it is, because that will count towards your income limit. Okay, so if you have a revocable trust, we need a copy of the trust document. If you have investment accounts in stocks, bonds, treasury bills, CDs, mutual funds, Robinhood, money market, any other online accounts, we just need the last month's statement. We don't need the last three. If you have retirement accounts, both past and current jobs, for IRAs, Roth, 401k, 403b, or whatever that account is called, the KEO. Again, we just need the last current statement. We don't need the last three. If you have a student, oh, wait a minute. If you have a whole life, a universal life insurance policy, this is not the policy your job may offer you, but you're paying it out of pocket, as a monthly expense. There typically is a cash value to those accounts, which counts towards your asset limit. If you have a term life insurance policy, there is no cash value to that, so you don't need to provide a copy of your statement. If you have personal property held as an investment, I've never had anyone with personal property they hold as an investment, but I would be guess you collect antique cars or whatever. Those are counted as part, the value is counted as part of your asset limit. And then if you receive one-time or lump sum receipts, that is counted towards your asset, not your income, meaning you got lottery winnings, or you got a, past child support in a lump sum, or past Social Security in a lump sum, or an insurance settlement. That doesn't count as income. That counts towards your asset limit. Okay. All right. If you have a child in your home that is 18 or older and a student, if he or she is a full-time college student and a dependent on your tax return, then we are, and they're working, we are, whether now or in the summer, we are going to only count $480 of their income towards your income eligibility. If they are a full-time student and working, or a part-time student and working, particularly a full-time student, if they are not a dependent on your tax return, then we are going to count their full income in determining your eligibility. And we will count their full income if they are a part-time student as well, whether or not they are dependent on your tax return. Their full income will count towards eligibility. So if you have a student, full-time or part-time, you need to provide a letter from the school, or a printout from the school that they shows that they are a full-time student. However you want to use that, usually we get a letter. It's a form letter from the college. These are the courses she's taken and it, or he's taking, and it'll say full-time student or part-time student. That's all you need to provide. Current semester, not 2 semesters ago, current semester. If you are pregnant, a household, unborn child is considered a household member, so you need to submit proof of that pregnancy, which is typically a letter from the doctor. If you are, I've already mentioned it, but going through a divorce or separation, you need to provide that documentation. You need to, we, in determining your eligibility, we need to know child support, alimony, distribution of family assets. So we need to have that documentation in order to determine that information. So if you haven't gotten that far in the process, with your ex or soon to be ex, then it may be too early for you to apply for the lottery. Doesn't mean you can't the next one, but it may be too early for you to apply for the lottery this time. So we do need that documentation, or if you're unable to provide it, then we can look at the income, household assets, first-time home buyer status for you and your soon-to-be ex to determine your eligibility, even if that ex will not be living with you in the property. But, people in the past have lied, shocker, saying they were going through a divorce, and then lo and behold, they moved in right behind the person and, lived in an affordable home they weren't eligible for. So, because that has happened, the state has required the additional documentation so we can make their determination on eligibility as a single person. If you are receiving a gift from a family member, or usually a family member, they need to include a letter that they are providing a gift for you and the dollar amount. If they give you a range, $10,000 to $20,000, we're always going to go with a higher amount. But they need to provide that letter with the application. We do not expect to see that money in your account, and that's okay. But we need to know you're obtaining that gift. If it is a substantial gift, then we ask that you provide a copy, or they provide a copy of their bank statement, the latest statement, and they can cross out, they need to keep their name, but they can, cross out and redact the account number. We just need to make sure they actually have the money that they say they're going to gift you. 9 times out of 10, they do, but, we just need to see the proof of those assets in determining your eligibility. If you have deposit money yourself, but it is at home, it is not in a bank, you need to deposit it in the bank account, okay, before we can count it as part of your assets. So if you say, I have, $5,000 under the mattress at home, it's not that I disbelieve you, it's just that we need to see the documented proof of those funds. So you need to deposit it in the bank before it will be counted towards the asset limit. And again, if you met one of the exceptions to the first-time homebuyer rule, we need a market analysis on what the sale price would be. If you have a mortgage on the property, you need to provide your last mortgage statement, and then we will determine the equity you are to get from the sale of your home, guesstimated. And then obviously we will need a copy of the closing statement to make a final determination on your eligibility for that property. And if you have no mortgage, that's okay, but you just need to let us know you have no mortgage so we don't look for it. All right, that pretty much covers everything. There's one more form here, which is if you are receiving, or you are divorced or separated, or no, divorced, custody and child support, whether if you aren't able to provide, if you're not receiving child support, I included this form here that you can complete and return one for each child as part of your application, and you're signing off that you're not receiving child support. So that's it. So when you submit your application, you need to complete the signed and dated application. That's the part of name, address. It's 2.5 pages. You sign and date the affidavit and disclosure form. You sign and date the application tip information sheet that I prepared. Then you complete, sign, and date the required personal identification and income verification documents form. That's the form I just went over. You need to provide all the required financial documentation. If your local preference, you need to provide proof of your local preference. If you require special accommodation, you need to provide the documentation with your application. And finally, a copy of your mortgage pre-approval letter. So all that has to be submitted. Postmarked on or before March 11th, 2024. If you are emailing it or faxing it, it must be in our email by 11:59 p.m. on March 11th. Anything after that, it is March 12th, and it won't be included. So, any questions? Oh, this recording will be posted to our website. If not tomorrow, this week it will be posted. It won't be tomorrow because of a storm. We're not going to be in the office, so it'll get posted on Wednesday. So it will be there. It will be up until March 11th, and then it will come down. Okay. Any other questions? No? All right. Then I'm going to say good night, and thank you for giving me an hour and a half of your time. I appreciate it, and I look forward to you applying for the lottery.